Dan Fisher helped me get my children into public schools. Bryson was too young, and Betty and Arthur weren't emotionally ready. We both thought that even if it was only for a few weeks, connecting with other children and wearing normal clothes would help normalize them. It also would help me gauge where they were academically and what grade would be appropriate for them come fall. Betty and Arthur refused to give up their FLDS clothing. Betty was incensed that her siblings were going to dress in worldly ways and go to worldly schools. She interfered whenever possible. She was angry, argumentative, and mean to me. I finally asked my younger sister Karen to let her stay at her house. I couldn't handle the stress or problems Betty was creating for the rest of us. Karen was 10 years younger than I and my full sister. She was in an arranged marriage, but she and her husband both fled. I felt that I was finally standing on solid ground, until my attorney, Doug White, told me that Merrill should be allowed to have visiting rights with my children. I didn't like the idea, but Doug told me that Merrill had rights as their father, and if I kept him away, it could work against me in court. That might have been true in a more normal case, but in reality, Merrill was a danger to my children. I should have pushed harder to prevent his visits, but I felt I had no choice. Doug White had been recommended by a group called Tapestry Against Polygamy. He had represented women pro bono in polygamy cases, but the stakes had not been nearly as high as in mine. Most of the cases he won by default. He had never handled a case like mine. Arrangements were made for Merrill to see the children for an hour in a nearby park. My brother-in-law, Robert, agreed to supervise the visitation. By now, it had been 6 weeks since we'd escaped. One might think that since Merrill was fighting so hard for custody, he might have spent some time with the children. But that was not the case. Merrill never cared about our children. He cared about making an example out of me so other women didn't make a break for freedom the way I had. Merrill arrived at the park with Barbara. She pranced around the picnic table, seemingly delighted. Merrill shouted at my brother-in-law for the entire hour, attacking him for his role in helping me settle into my new life. "If you knew what was good for you, you'd send her back right away and stop participating in this nonsense," Merrill said. I was pushing Harrison in his stroller and walking around the perimeter of the park with my sister Annette. Barbara was watching us walk around the park. I think she finally realized that she had no power over me anymore. "She can't stand it that you're so happy right now and she can't hurt your children," Annette said. I realized she was right. Barbara couldn't hurt my children or me. Not that day, not ever. When Merrill said goodbye to the children, he told them to stay faithful. He didn't kiss or hug them, but he never had. Several days later, one of Dan's friends drove into his yard and saw several of my children playing. He stopped the car and asked 10-year-old Patrick how he was doing. Patrick's face lit up in a big smile. "We're living in hell," he replied automatically. His words said one thing, his smile another. Patrick, like my other kids, was having the time of his life. Leni kept a cupboard full of cookies and snack foods. Her freezer was loaded with ice cream. The day we first arrived, she said my children were welcome to help themselves anytime they were hungry. She also told them when they came over for a snack that they could give her a hug. This was a gift Leni gave both to my children and to me.